Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued.
Today, we're diving into Juneteenth. It's a day steeped in history, profound meaning, and, well, continuing relevance. Mm-hmm. For some of you, it might be a relatively new discovery. For others, it's a deeply sacred annual recognition.
That's right.
Our mission today is really to give you a shortcut to being truly well-informed about this pivotal moment and, you know, its ongoing impact. We'll be drawing insights from a really powerful piece called Juneteenth, the celebration they never wanted us to have, by the Church of Tinkerbell. Okay, let's unpack this.
Indeed. And this source, it offers a compelling reflection on freedom, truth, and the persistent work required for justice. We'll be pulling out the core historical facts, exploring the profound implications of delayed liberation, and understanding why this day resonates so strongly even now.
Right.
Our goal is to kind of connect the dots, helping you understand not just what Juneteenth is, but really why it matters, and maybe what it asks of all of us today.
Okay, so let's start right at the beginning, the basics. What is Juneteenth precisely? I mean, for many people, its meaning wasn't something widely taught in schools.
Right. Juneteenth, which is short for June 19th, marks a very specific moment in 1865. It's the day Union troops finally arrived in Galveston, Texas, and actually enforced the Emancipation Proclamation.
Enforced it. Because the proclamation itself was much earlier.
Much earlier, yeah. It's critical to remember the Emancipation Proclamation itself had been issued over 2.5 years earlier, back in January 1863.
Wow.
Yeah. So black people in Texas, being in the most remote Confederate state, were still held in bondage. Even though they were legally free by federal decree, they just didn't know it, or it wasn't being enforced.
And there was a specific moment, a very public one, when the news was finally delivered, wasn't there?
Yes, exactly. On that day, June 19th, 1865, General Gordon Granger stood before the people in Galveston, and he read General Order Number 3. It stated, pretty plainly, "The people of Texas are informed that, in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free."
Huh. Just like that.
Well, not quite like magic. The Church of Tinkerbell piece, our source here, really highlights that this wasn't some instantaneous transformation. You know, many enslavers deliberately hid the announcement, or they fled, or they just flat out refused to acknowledge the law.
So resistance right from the start.
Absolutely. But for the newly freed people, this arrival of long overdue news, however delayed, it was still described as this incredibly powerful turning point, like a crack of light in a centuries long darkness.
That detail, though, the 2.5 year delay between the proclamation and enforcement in Texas, that really jumps out. What does that gap, that delay, tell us about the nature of liberation in America?
Well, it raises a really important question that this source grapples with directly. Why were enslavers allowed to continue what the text calls this horror show for so long without immediate consequence?
Yeah.
And what's particularly insightful, I think, from this perspective is the idea that freedom for Black Americans wasn't something simply, you know, granted. It wasn't handed over easily. Instead, the source says it was fought for bitterly, constantly, exhaustingly, by those who were denied it.
So a constant struggle.
A constant struggle. Well, the source vividly portrays America not as like joyfully welcoming freedom, but rather clawing at their backs, trying to chain them in new ways, changing the names, but not the game.
Changing the names, but not the game.
Yeah.
So the struggle for real freedom didn't just stop in 1865. It just, evolved. Shifted.
Exactly. It evolved. It shifted forms. This is where the enduring relevance of Juneteenth truly comes into focus, I think. When we connect this to the bigger historical picture, we see how the resistance to true liberation just mutated. It changed shape. Our source points directly to how systems of enslavement transformed into other practices, things like sharecropping.
Right. Which kept people tied to the land.
Precisely. Tied to the land, often in debt. Then there was convict leasing, basically a system that re-enslaved people, often black men, for labor.
Horrifying.
Yeah. And then, of course, Jim Crow laws, legally enforcing segregation and taking away voting rights. redlining, which systematically denied services and loans to Black neighborhoods. And the source argues this continues into modern issues like mass incarceration, police violence, underfunded schools, huge generational wealth gaps, and voter suppression tactics we still see today.
So the argument is that the core struggle never actually ended.
It never ended. It shifted terrain. And understanding that perspective is really crucial for seeing why Juneteenth isn't just about looking back at the past.
Okay, with that context, it makes a lot more sense why this piece calls Juneteenth not just history, but a mirror. What does it reflect about right now, according to them?
Well, the Church of Tinkerbell piece poses these really powerful questions for us today. Questions like, how much of that freedom promised has truly been fulfilled? Mm. And how many more centuries will it take before Black Americans experience equality, not just on paper, you know, but in their daily lives?
Heavy questions.
Very. And the source highlights a tension it perceives in the present. It notes that while some politicians might label Juneteenth a federal holiday, perhaps to appear progressive, it claims that at the same time, some of those same forces might be working to ban books that tell the real stories, or push legislation that hides the truth, or generally whitewash history.
So a sort of performative acknowledgement without substance.
That's the critique being made here, yes. This particular perspective argues that people who say all lives matter, while proving by action that Black lives still don't matter equally, are part of this ongoing problem. From this viewpoint, Juneteenth refuses to be sanitized.
Yeah.
It's not seen as just a day for like barbecue and feel-good hashtags.
Right.
Instead, it's framed as a freedom fire lit by enslaved hands passed through generations still burning.
Wow, freedom fire. That's powerful imagery. Now, the Church of Tinkerbell, they're very clear about what they celebrate and what they refuse to forget on Juneteenth. Can you break that down?
Yeah, they make some clear distinctions. Their perspective frames Juneteenth as a day specifically for lifting the veil, for naming systems of power and dismantling the lies they argue these systems are built on.
Okay, so naming and dismantling. What do they celebrate?
They celebrate the profound strength and resilience of Black communities. They celebrate the unwavering courage of enslaved people who dared to dream of freedom against all odds. And they celebrate the transformative power of telling the truth.
And on the flip side, what do they refuse to forget?
They refuse to forget that freedom was delivered late, that it was met with fierce resistance right from the start and continuing.
Mm-hmm.
They refuse to forget that systems of racial oppression, in their view, are not relics of the past, but living structures that still operate today. And importantly, they emphasize that allyship means action, not just acknowledgement.
Action, not just acknowledgement.
Okay. Yeah.
So putting this all together, what does this mean for us, for the listeners? How can someone truly honor Juneteenth, going beyond just, you know, knowing the date?
Right. Well, this source offers five pretty specific ways to honor Juneteenth with more than words. And it emphasizes, importantly, that you don't need to be Black to honor it, but you do need, in their words, humility, honesty, and a willingness to learn.
Okay. Humility, honesty, willingness to learn. What are the actions?
So first, learn real history. This means actively seeking out stories not typically taught in school, listening to Black voices, reading Black authors, really understanding the deep roots of racial injustice.
Makes sense. Go beyond the textbook. What's second?
Second, support Black-owned businesses. This is about making conscious economic choices that specifically uplift Black communities. And not just on Juneteenth, but like consistently, year-round.
Okay, economic action. Third.
Third, donate to racial justice work, providing sustained financial support, not just a one-off thing, to organizations that are actively on the ground, fighting for justice, equity, and opportunity.
Got it. Support the work. Fourth.
Fourth, challenge whitewash narratives. This means speaking up when you see history being distorted or when injustice is being excused or downplayed, whether that's, you know, in your workplace or around the family dinner table or in community groups.
So using your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And the fifth one.
And fifth, show up in solidarity. This involves engaging in direct action. Things like marching, voting consciously, protesting, signing petitions, talking to your legislators, and being, as the source puts it rather strikingly, a disruption when comfort serves injustice.
A disruption when comfort serves injustice.
That's a powerful phrase. You know, this whole deep dive really underscores that Juneteenth's significance stretches so far beyond just a single day on the calendar. The Church of Tinkerbell piece, it actually concludes with this section called A Word from the Fairy Rebellion, which is quite a title.
It is. And in it, they define magic, their kind of magic, as radical compassion, collective liberation, and unapologetic truth-telling.
Radical compassion, collective liberation, unapologetic truth-telling.
Yeah. And they offer this creed that really resonates. It says, I will not hide my light to make you comfortable. I will not pretend your chains are freedom. I will never stop believing in liberation, even when you say it's impossible.
This text, it calls Juneteenth holy ground. Not because everything was suddenly made perfect on that day, far from it, but because people believed in freedom when every single force around them told them it was impossible.
That belief itself was powerful.
Exactly. It's presented almost as a candle we light, not just for what was, but for what could be. It really invites you, the listener, to consider not just the historical fact of that delayed freedom, but the ongoing work it demands from all of us, right here, right now, in the present.
What really stands out to you from digging into this source on Juneteenth? For me, it's that challenge, that call to action to never let that light of freedom go out by doing the work, you know, by seeking and telling the truth continuously. It feels really compelling. Thanks for going on this little adventure with me today.
Anytime.
And listener, keep sprinkling that fairy dust, all right? We'll see you next time.